Hi, this is Jack Vaughn.
And this is Ed Burns.
And we are welcoming you to an end-of-the-year edition of the Talking Data Podcast. It's entitled Data and Analytics in 2015. You know, the Oxford Dictionary people have a bit they do every year at the end of the year, like us. They come up with a word. This year they didn't come up with a word. You know, they actually did an emoticon. It's faced with tears of joy. Anyway, we're going to go where Oxford feared to tread. Today we are going to give you the word of the year for data analytics. It's Spark. So the truth is we've been talking about Spark for a couple of years already. But this year it just passed was something of a breakout year for the Apache Spark distributed analytics engine. And it's important because of its machine learning libraries, its streaming data capabilities, its high-level programmability, its SQL interface, and its speed. It has definitely had an impact on the world, according to Hadoop. Just this week, Hortonworks, a big independent Hadoop distribution provider, brought out a new version of its data platform, including the Apache Spark 1.5.2 version with Spark SQL and Spark Streaming. MapR and Cloudera, big Hadoop names that have incorporated Spark into their distributions too. And of course, IBM's big push on Spark in 2015 was something we covered and certainly is another indicator of Spark fever. Now, you've covered this very extensively, Ed, and where would you start if you were describing Spark and its analytic impact now?
Sure. So there's obviously a lot that you could talk about with Spark. You know, there's obviously the data management side of things, which is what you've covered a lot. I'm looking at it kind of more from the perspective of how people are using it in along with analytic applications. And so there has been a lot of development there, I think. You know, the last couple of years, it seemed like people were kind of working to understand how to just set it up and, you know, incorporate it into their data pipelines. But this year, I think we saw a lot more activity around people figuring out, so they have everything set up, now what can you do with it? And so I did some coverage around the Spark Summit that took place out on the West Coast, and a lot of people were talking about how they're using some of the built-in libraries that come with Spark. Especially the machine learning library sounds like it's attracting a lot of attention. People are using that to do some pretty sophisticated things, and it seems like the obvious draw of that is that it comes with some pre-built algorithms that you can just sort of snap onto whatever you're doing and sort of eliminate some of the legwork, which I can definitely see a lot of analytic people appreciating. From some of the coverage I did, it sounded like it may not be quite that easy. You know, it's not quite as simple as just flipping a light switch, but it does seem like these built-in algorithms can sort of help you get a little bit farther than you would have been able to get on your own. At this year's Spark Summit, I saw a presentation from Christopher Burdorf. He's with NBC Universal, and he talked about how they're using one of the algorithms from the machine learning library to manage some of the files that they keep on their distribution servers. And so basically, these servers hold all the files that the centralized NBC offices distribute out to their local affiliates. And so as you can imagine, these are very large video files, and you can't possibly hold them all on a single server, so some have to be taken off periodically. And so they're using the machine learning library to actively and automatically manage what's on the server and what gets taken off. And so this is just eliminating a lot of the human management that needs to take place. It's saving a lot of time for them and delivering some pretty good results. The other thing that we're seeing with in relation to analytic applications with Spark is people really seem to be appreciating the speed that can that Spark can deliver. Obviously, one of the main draws of Spark is that it does in-memory computing, and so any application that you build on top of the computing framework is going to work in memory, which is much faster than going to disk for everything. And so there's definitely been a lot of interest from some of the end users, not the typical tech-heavy people that we would imagine are drawn to Spark, but people who are kind of at the very end of the data pipeline, who are just, you know, doing data discovery and things of that nature. They like Spark for its performance with the speed that they can get from its end-memory computing.
That's kind of along the lines of things that I'm hearing at the Search Data Management. But, of course, we're also careful not to go overboard. There's a teething period going on, and even Hadoop is some years after its initiation going through the period like that still. I think one of the things with the in-memory is that they're finding out, you know, what happens when they overflood their memory with the Spark jobs, and they have to deal with that. And that is cheap. You know, an issue with Hadoop in a way is that it preceded the real rush of in-memory technology. But, you know, as cheap as semiconductor memory can be, you just can't use it infinitely.
But, yeah, I definitely take your point there. Even among the people who I've interviewed who are using Spark and who like it and who are impressed by its functionality, they still say that it's, you know, it has some flaws. And part of using Spark right now, at least in this state of relative immaturity, is that you have to understand that sometimes jobs are going to fail, and you just need to be ready for that. And, you know, you even if you're using a distribution from one of the vendors, which comes with some more support, this is still an issue. So you do need to have some pretty technically knowledgeable people on staff who can handle these types of issues as they arise. And it's maybe not quite ready for some of the more mission-critical applications that businesses are doing, you know, maybe their public-facing website or something like that. You know, anything that you can't really afford to have any downtime on is maybe not such a great use case for Spark.
Yeah, well, I recall at the Strata Hadoop conference in New York, there were some Netflix engineers, and they were discussing all the difficulties there are in putting Spark into production, and one of which is failing is you have to learn how to fail, and young systems, immature systems, it's still early going for figuring out how they can fail over. And it is interesting. I wanted to know too about the machine learning stuff you saw with NBC. A lot of times we think of machine learning as pretty fancy and kind of NSA sort of crypto clearance stuff, and but yet it can be regular jobs that people would rather hand over to the machine. And in this case where you mentioned going through programs and figuring out what they are, it reminds me of the story we did on a recent podcast about NOAA, where they were trying to identify, that's the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, who were trying to identify whales through pictures and using machine learning to do that. In this case, it wasn't Spark, but it does seem like a Spark may be bringing machine learning more widely, bringing it into a bit more of a mainstream.
And yeah, I would agree with that. It seems like it's maybe to some degree lowered the barrier to entry in machine learning, because like you said, I think that there is this perception, and probably for good reason, that machine learning is sort of this really out there, far advanced sort of thing that you need to be one of these, you know, chosen few to be able to understand how to do it. But like we said, with the machine learning library that comes with Spark, a lot of the legwork is done for you. And so I think that's why we're, at least with Spark in machine learning, we're seeing more people like NBC using it for some of the more, I guess you could say, just simpler tasks, not necessarily, you know, some kind of earth-shattering business initiative, but just the repetitive, time-consuming, boring tasks that have to be done, but no person would actually want to do it.
Really glad to have joining with us today the executive editor for Search Business Analytics and Search Data Management, Craig Stedman.
Hi, Jack. Glad to be here.
So we're looking at Spark as the word for this year, but Maybe we should look at the question, is it displacing words of the past?
Well, I think last year's word, the word of 2014, was probably Hadoop. And it's maybe not a direct result of Spark, but I think Hadoop, maybe finds itself a little bit on the run or in a little bit of flux this year. If you go even farther back, maybe the word of, 2010 or 2012 was MapReduce, which is the programming environment that is a companion to Hadoop and really the original resource manager, cluster resource management technology in Hadoop as well. So I think MapReduce has really been reduced in stature, and particularly this year, there's the Strata and Hadoop World conference in New York. The sense of people trying to run away from MapReduce as fast and as much as they can was pretty palpable. People are trying to do development. Well, Yarn, which is was the new technology in Hadoop, replaced MapReduce as the cluster resource management component in Hadoop in late 2013, and that has opened up Hadoop to a lot of different applications, not just MapReduce batch processing jobs. So the big question is, how far are people, vendors going to go in separating Spark from Hadoop? So, Databricks came out during the summer it was in September that they released it. It was a survey that their responses were that or claimed that 48% of the respondents were running Spark standalone on a standalone basis, compared to 40% that were running it on Hadoop and Yarn. Other people that we've talked to, think that it's that there's a lot more users doing real production applications who are on Spark that are using it in conjunction with Hadoop, not on a standalone basis. But Spark could be a friend, it could be a foe. Or as Merv Adrian from Gartner said this year at a conference that I was at, it could be a case of the disruptor, i.e., Hadoop, meeting the new disruptor. Spark.
I still see people using MapReduce. I talk to them fairly often, one of the sweet spots I think for Hadoop was repurposing, replatforming enterprise data warehouses, doing the ETL or the ELT, doing the extraction, transform and load, and that the MapReduce may still work okay for some kinds of simple jobs. And then the machine learning is a buzzword, and that's a big one where Spark stands out versus the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, MapReduce definitely isn't going away. I mean, there's too many applications out there that have been written with it. And it's, if you're doing batch processing of large amounts of data in a Hadoop cluster, I mean, MapReduce is probably what you're going to use. Anyway, there's a lot, so that's not going away, but it's definitely, people are for more interactive applications, like things like machine learning, stream processing, which, you really can't do. You can't do these kind of things with MapReduce because it is limited to batch processing jobs. So if you're trying to do interactive, real-time streaming kind of applications, you have to look to other technologies such as Spark, you also could look at SQL on Hadoop technologies, which is another technology that category that's really kind of emerging. In a big way, but also, also in a...
Dorm could be a dark horse.
Yes.
And yeah. Somebody I talked with say, Spark is quick, but it's still batch. Maybe 3-second batches. But
well, yes. Yeah, if you get it, stream processing. Yeah, stream processing in Spark is technically not really stream processing. It's micro batches. But it effectively sort of works as stream processing, and there are a lot of users who are doing stream processing are doing it in Spark because it's a relatively compared to say some of the the traditional stream processing technologies, complex event processing type of technologies. It's a lot easier to use than less expensive. It's not just from a Hadoop standpoint. It's not just MapReduce. It's also the Hadoop distributed file system is also kind of on the run a bit. Even the Hadoop vendors are not stepping away from that, but hedging their bets a little bit on that. Cloudera, the top Hadoop distribution vendor, announced an alternative to HDFS as the storage mechanism in Hadoop clusters at the Strata and Hadoop World conference in New York, called Kudu, for more real-time interactive applications. It's a faster storage layer than HDFS, and it could be going between different platforms, not including HDFS. Mm-hmm. So in the future, you could have, and probably will have, Hadoop clusters that don't include HDFS or MapReduce, the two original components that originally comprised Hadoop. So, are they still Hadoop clusters or not? Are they something else? Could be that Hadoop will still be the leading big data technology, but maybe in name only.
People needed a name, and they found one, but there was actually something else they were talking about.
Yeah, I mean, you could have, people talk about the Hadoop ecosystem, meaning Hadoop and then all these other related tools kind of that revolve around it. So what we think of as Hadoop that may still be at the center of the Hadoop ecosystem, but it may be a name only.
Hadoop in quotes.
Right, correct.
Thank you for covering this ground. I think one thing we could all agree on that all these different oddly named technologies are sort of a guaranteed full employment program for analysts and hopefully reporters too. Thank you for joining us on the Talking Data podcast throughout the year. We'll see you in the calendar. Hope so.